This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Hey, good Tuesday morning to you. It's Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio coming up in hour number two, Good, the Bad, and the Dumb. We'll also talk to our good friend Ben Kercheval, CBS Sports, on Alabama's win last night, college football in general, because whether or not you agree with how college football was played this season, if it should have been played, the procedure in which it was played, it got to the finish line, and should it be applauded for that? We'll also discuss that. Last night, Alabama, another national championship. It is the sixth for Nick Saban at Alabama. It is the seventh overall, adding the one he got at LSU. It was a dominating game for the Crimson Tide. The players that he needed to step up, stepped up big time. Mac Jones had five touchdowns, three to Devontae Smith, the Heisman Trophy winner, who, by the way, Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit reminded us over and over again that Devontae Smith was the Heisman Trophy winner. I thought if you took a shot every time they said Heisman Trophy winner, you'd be drunk by midway through the second quarter. Because that's the kind of game Devontae Smith was having. It wasn't like they were just bringing it up out of nowhere. He had 12 catches in the first half for 215 yards and three touchdowns before he left with a hand injury. But Alabama's victory, again, sealed a perfect season for Nick Saban. They went 13-0 in a COVID year where college football was in a state of just limbo. We really didn't know how it was going down. You know, you go back to August, and I know we've talked about it throughout all of the fall, about how the Big Ten, you know, said no football. Let's see where the dominoes fall, right? The Big Ten said no, Pac-12 said no, but once all the other conferences said, yeah, hold up, I think we can play. We'll see how this is going to go. I think we can play. Then it sort of changed the thought of the sport. But what really changed it was when they did play, when games were being played. And I think the other conferences were like, we can't miss out on this, let's come back. And for Ohio State, the team that was at the forefront of that, let's play, let's play, let's play, Justin Fields screaming it from a mountaintop, they got what they wanted out of this deal. They got a shot at a championship. They had their one game shot to win it all. They came up short, but they got what they thought was going to be their 2020 season. We'll talk about the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up, and then college football continuing.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb here on a Tuesday. Glad you could be with us, SportsMap Radio, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. All right, what is the good of the day, my friend?
Well, I'm feeling extra good, so I chose two.
Oh,
I got
you
two
did?
Goods
awesome.
Of the day. Yes, I do. One was Coach Saban's heart.
Coach Saban's heart.
Yeah, that's usually not in the good because many people probably don't know that he has one, but he does.
He does.
He does have a heart. I'm not going to talk about him crying after the game, but what I am going to talk about is him playing Landon Dickerson.
Yeah, that was awesome.
At the end of the game, just to have him take that kneel down snap. And, you know, if you don't remember, Landon Dickerson had a gruesome knee injury in the SEC championship game.
Yep. And he was a Remington finalist, the trophy.
I think he won.
I think he won. Yeah. But he got to go in the game.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, yeah, it's a garbage play. It doesn't really matter. But the symbol of it,
you know,
is
it's
so much bigger.
It's great because, you know, it's nice to know that, like, in a blowout like that, you're thinking those kind of thoughts. Like,
right.
Saban said afterwards, this is for the players, this is about the players, and he proved it because he didn't get caught up in the moment for himself. He was really going, hey, the seconds are winding down, oh yeah, I want to get this guy in that I love and I need him on that field.
Well, not like that, but you know, I mean, you remember when he got carted off the field?
Yeah,
the entire team came over and gave him a handshake.
Absolutely. And they went crazy when he went out there. Like, they all went crazy when he went out there. So I'm sure he thought about it. Him and his coaching staffs talked about it. Like, hey, listen, if we're up and we're leading, you know, let's get Landon in that game. And I was glad they did. That was awesome.
I'm just impressed because no matter what kind of injury I suffer, I could have like just a really infested hangnail. I don't think I'm going out there.
Yeah, no, I'd be like, no, I'm good, coach. I'm good. I don't need, because I'm, it's still painful.
Yeah.
I'm just going to live with this forever.
But I thought that was a cool moment to see that at the end of the game, you know, and just how excited he was. I mean, I don't even know if his feet touched the ground when he was running out there.
Yeah, that's great.
And the other cool part, too, was the excitement in the huddle.
Yeah,
as he came out there, one of the guys is like, "Yeah, man, I'm replacing." He's like, "Oh, it's you! Yeah,
absolutely."
Know, took off.
Absolutely, that was great. That was a great moment. That is a good.
That was a good. There was another good, which was Tom Brady's sense of humor. There was a little graphic that he put up about his showdown against Drew Brees, which I thought was kind of fun because they showed the two of them as really old men.
Yeah, that was really cool. And it was a History Channel.
Yeah, History Channel.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. That was neat. Two 40-year-old guys duking it out in the playoffs for the National Football League. That was pretty nice.
I mean, just old.
Yeah, look, as I've gotten older, I've sort of liked to make old man jokes, but it's kind of cool that athletes who don't want to recognize that they're getting old will have no problem laughing at themselves getting old. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Well, and this is one of those moments, too. I mean, you have two future Hall of Fame quarterbacks, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And then I have a feeling that one of these guys, well, I don't know, depends on what happens with the Bears and Packers, but I'm going to assume one of these two guys will be facing off against Aaron Rodgers next, not this coming weekend, but the following.
Well, you know, I always say this to people. It's, you know, when they talk, whenever I hear fans say, "I wish that guy would just retire," I'm like, really? Look, imagine you've trained your whole life, and then at 38, 39, 40, 41, whatever it is, your body goes, "No, you can't do this anymore." And that's it. That's it. You're done. Go find something else to do. Like let's say you went to medical school.
Well, that's why
by the time you reached 40, they said, "You can't be a doctor anymore. You're too old."
When you see these prominent athletes who have to retire are always crying at the podium.
Yeah.
They don't know anything else. And it's like, this was it. I'm done.
There is a real myth out there that these guys just had it easy, natural talent, people just paved the way. That is not true. To get to the level of being a paid professional athlete takes a lot of work and a lot of dedication. It takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of sacrifice. And for them to just give that away because they have enough money, it's not about the money. It's all about this. When I'm done, I'm never, ever, ever doing this again. It's not, I'll do it for somebody else. I'll work for another company. I'll do it part-time. I'll do it on the side. They won't do this ever again. So it is refreshing when you have an older guy who you know is on the tail end of the career that eventually will be saying goodbye, kind of poking fun at the fact that they're getting older. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That is kind of cool.
Now, this isn't the bat of the day, but I failed to mention this, and I didn't know if you saw it. Did you see that graphic with Tom Brady next to George Blanda?
No, I did not.
Oh, my God. All right, you just got to, throw it in the Twitter, throw it in the Google. It'll probably pop up right away. Basically, there was a graphic. Who carried the game? Was that Fox? No, CBS.
CBS.
CBS carried the Buccaneers and Washington football.
Oh, no, was that NBC?
No.
Sunday night? Saturday night?
Was this? No, it was ABC.
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 Okay. No, ESPN. That was, right? The ESPN crew?
Anyways, they threw up a graphic. It was the oldest player to throw a touchdown pass. Tom Brady is now the oldest player to throw a touchdown pass at 43 years, 159 days. He broke George Blanda's record of 43 years, 108 days. Now, the graphic that they put up, it makes you think, it makes you assume that there's a 43-year-old Tom Brady and a 43-year-old George Blanda.
Oh.
But I do know George Blanda played well into his 40s, right?
Yeah, late 40s, I think, yeah.
I think that's what this photo is from. Because when you see these two side by side, George Blanda looks like he's 70 years old.
Oh, no doubt. I've seen those pictures, yeah. And it is amazing.
It's just, I showed it to my wife. I'm like, does this even make sense? She's like, well, you know, that, you know, what's his program called? That just, you know, that's what's doing wonders for him. I'm like, TB12?
Yeah, TB12. All the greens and vitamins and supplements. And
I guess that's working.
Look at us vouching for it. We have no idea exactly what it is.
I don't know it either, because George Blanda looks like a steel worker who smoked a carton before he put on the uniform.
Bacon and potatoes every day, man. All right, so real. that wasn't the bad.
I just forgot to you know, I wanted to bring that up. No, the bad of the day, and I'm not getting I'm not going to get political. I just found the story hilarious. Right, so one of the people that stormed the Capitol, he was an Air Force veteran, was identified and turned into the FBI by his ex-wife.
Well, naturally, that's going to happen, right?
I just thought that was hysterical. That of all people, now, you know, some people have been being turned in by, like, maybe coworkers, a store, a grocery store owner, maybe a neighbor. This one was turned in by his ex-wife, who recognized him right away from the photos.
Yeah, that's great. That's naturally going to take place. Yeah, be careful. Your ex-wife could be out there, you know, looking through FBI files to see if they find you.
Just, you know, looking
at it. Sounds like something my ex-husband would do. Let me just see if his picture is located in this book.
Right. Or, I mean, or if it's just prominent, like, that guy looked really familiar right there. And it doesn't surprise me that it's him. You know what? I think I shall turn him in.
I think I'll turn him in. Nice. Nice. Oh, yeah. That's funny.
That is.
All right. What's the dumb of the day?
Samsung.
Samsung?
They have a robot in production. That I'm putting in production in quotes because I don't know how quickly they'll have it in production. But this robot will pick up your laundry, load the dishwasher, set the table, pour wine.
And kill you in your sleep.
And eventually. Because, I mean, it's going to get bored of
right.
doing that
it's going to need something
we
to
know,
do.
You know, they keep trying to tell us that, no, robots can't think for themselves. They're just programmed. It's like, you know, we've seen it all.
Is it going to load the dishwasher seriously?
It loads the dishwasher.
Will it load the dishwasher the way my wife likes it to be loaded, where she goes, oh, no, you've lost a lot of room.
I watched a video of it, and it kind of just, like, analyzes what it's putting in and where, and it's really creepy.
Really cool. All right. Very good. Because when I load the dishwasher, I always leave, like, five or six things in the sink, and I go, there's no room. And my wife goes, oh, there's room. And she goes, boom, 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 you need to move this. See, I just created a whole bunch of square feet.
I'm that way.
You know?
I just cram
it all in?
When I do the dishes, I look at it as, you know, I'm playing Tetris.
Like a Tetris puzzle, yeah.
Yeah.
I
go to town on it, but...
If the robot can do that, I'm all in. But again, it'll just go,
we just know
me.
That eventually what's going to happen. It's called Bot Handy.
Oh.
So, I mean,
is this like Rosie from the Jetsons?
In a way. I mean, it does pick up your laundry. It's not folding laundry. I would need a robot to fold laundry.
Yeah, me too. I hate that.
Three boys is going through clothes all the time. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Wow. It's amazing how the Jetsons thought that in the future that your robot maid would look like a 1920s robot.
Yeah. This
right?
one,
Instead
I mean.
Of,
have you been to
like a human being?
I'm going to say Walmart because it's the only place I've seen it where Walmart has a robot that just kind of cruises the aisles.
No, I have not seen that.
All right. Our local Walmart that's down the street from us has a robot. It's just a vacuum. It's like pretty much like a whatchamacallit?
Like a shark?
Like those things. But it's a tall thing. It's
oh, okay.
really tall.
Just
but
vacuums the floor?
And it just, yeah, vacuums and washes the floor. And
doesn't it doesn't talk?
It doesn't talk. It senses where you are. It senses where the aisles are. Like, if you're standing in an aisle, it'll turn down your aisle and then stop and turn around and go around the other way.
That used to be somebody's job.
Yes.
No, it's not.
But, I mean, that's its sole purpose. I mean, actually, it's straight out of WALL-E. If I'm being honest.
Sure.
It's one of those robots straight out of WALL-E. All it does is just clean the floors.
Man.
But and it looks nothing like that's what kind of this looks like, except it has an arm that comes out and loads dishes perfectly. And
strangles you in your sleep.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, because it has a claw at the end of it. So you know it's just a matter of time.
Egads.
Where it's trying to take the shirt that you're wearing, and it's like, oh, I need to pick up laundry. And
you know
just
that
ripping you to shreds.
We always have fun with these robot stories, but eventually, when they become affordable, I'll probably have one.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean.
You telling me you wouldn't want a robot that could set the table and do your
eventually
dishes?
When these things are like, you know, like you're like, all right, that's an affordable thing. I will probably get one.
No, you look at it this way, like a say a VCR or how about that? There's a flat screen TV.
Yeah, remember when no one could get one of those?
No one could get one. I remember the first one we bought was it was just a plasma TV, which I don't even think they make plasma TVs anymore.
Nope.
It cost us an arm and a leg to get it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now you can get four of them on sale.
Yeah, all right, for $100.
That's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Ben Kercheval is going to join us in a bit. We'll talk to him about the college football national championship game. Today's show brought to you by The Athletic, delivering every sports story that matters. The Athletic has full-time local writers dedicated to your teams, providing breaking news, in-depth analysis, exclusive stories you can't find anywhere else, plus national names like Robert Mays, Stuart Mandel, David Aldridge, Ken Rosenthal, Lindsey Jones. They provide unrivaled league-level perspective and insight. It's all personalized and ad-free. Lord knows I went right to The Athletic when that Steelers game was over, just to see the analysis of that game from the Steelers writers. Whether you're looking for a fantasy football edge or a long-term outlook on your NBA team, The Athletic has the sports coverage you need. Subscribe today, $3.99 a month at theathletic.com/gal. That's theathletic.com/gal, $3.99 a month. Get all of The Athletic's coverage. Head to theathletic.com/gal. All right, we'll talk more about the national championship game last night and look ahead to the NFL playoffs this weekend as we continue on Wake Up Call.
SportsNap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, a weak battery could leave you stranded. Don't take a chance. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test that battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, their professional parts people can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Make sure your vehicle is prepared for the weather ahead by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. So the college football season in the books, it's done. Was it worth it? So that's going to be a question a lot of people are going to have. And a lot of people are going to say, yes, I'm one of them. I'm glad we had college football this season. That was important to have college football this season. Dan Wolken, who appears on this show occasionally, was a guy that you never felt like he was very on board with this college football playing. He saw the rise of COVID. He looked at the numbers. He didn't feel like it was a good idea to be playing college football in a pandemic. And I can't tell anybody how to feel about the virus. I can't tell you not to be afraid of it, and I can't tell you to be fearful of it. I think it's each individual. If you have a health issue and you're scared of the virus, that's fine. And if you're young and you feel like you just get it and overcome it, that's fine too. It's how we kind of come to terms on how what we want from the things we want, whether it's worth it or not. Some states are in lockdown and you can't go to dinner. My town, for example, every restaurant's open. So college football had this sort of situation, but it was different than all these other professional sports that was trying to find a way to play, because the professional sports were dealing with players' unions. So you would sit down at the bargaining table, and we saw it a number of times. I mean, in fact, baseball famously this summer had negotiations that really weren't about the coronavirus, had more to do with money. But nevertheless, all of the leagues had to sit down with their players' union to say, if we're going to do this, this is what it's going to look like financially. This is what it's going to look like from a procedure point of view. This is what it's going to look like from a safety point of view. So if you're on board with this, we're on board with this, and let's come to an agreement so we can play. And college football doesn't have to do that. It did not have to do that. And college basketball doesn't have to do that either. The players have no representation here. They don't. And so this is one of the reasons, and I'll stick up for Dan Wolken in this regard. It's one of the reasons that a guy like him and a number of other people were very skeptical about how this was going to work out. How do you operate a entity, an entertainment entity, when a majority of the participants don't have any representation, are not paid, and are not in control of the situation other than saying, I'm not playing? And what does that mean for their scholarship and whatnot? And then we found out, okay, you can opt out and keep your scholarship. All right, so we started working out some of the details. But at the beginning, we weren't really sure what those details were going to be. So even though I disagree with people like Dan Wolken, I thought college football should have played. I'm glad they did. I'm glad the Big Ten came and played, even though it was a shortened season. I'm glad the Pac-12 did the exact same thing. But it wasn't without real problems. I mean, games were getting canceled all over the place. If you look at the Pac-12, for example, they were in states that were ravaged by this, and they were under governments that didn't let you do anything. I mean, they weren't letting you do anything. So games were canceled. The games weren't. Some teams played four games. Some played five. I mean, it was because they had gotten a late start and it wasn't in a controlled situation within their state. Is it really a surprise that the SEC pretty much got all their games in? Right? They were a conference that really wanted this. The states really wanted this. There was a cooperation between those entities. How college football in 2020 is going to be remembered and how COVID affected it, I think books are going to get written on it. I think there's going to be a number of reporters that are going to say, look, I'm going to write the book about 2020 and what this all led to. You know, I mean, you think about the Big Ten, thinking it was doing right by its players. I mean, look, no conference wants to give up football money. Nobody does, right? Nobody does. If they could find a way to play in a tornado, they would do it. But they looked at the situation and they didn't want to be responsible for any deaths that would have occurred. Now, we can all look back and say, well, young people aren't dying of the virus. But as I said over the summer, I'm not sure a 350-pound lineman may survive coronavirus if he gets it, even if he's 19, 20. I don't know. Right? I mean, every now and then we have a football player die just from working out. Right? Because there's a heart ailment that they didn't detect or something else was going on with that athlete that we didn't know.
What was it Florida State, the basketball player?
We had he collapsed, right?
He just collapsed right there.
It was Florida. It was Florida.
I can't remember his name. Yeah. Seemed like 5 years ago.
And it was, you're right. And it was, and so I was more like, listen, if I'm responsible, if I'm a conference and I've got 100 players on each team and I got 12 teams, 14 teams, 10 teams, whatever it is, and I'm talking about 1,000 student athletes that play my particular sport, I don't want to go to bed at night knowing that I made a decision where an athlete who got COVID-19 died because of playing football. Now, if you got COVID-19 going to a party, but what if you got COVID-19 because of something football related and they can trace it back to something football related? I don't know if I. So I understood all of these sort of obstacles that these conferences were going through. But I also knew that players like Justin Fields, and I bring him up because he was the most vocal about it, who said, wait a minute, don't take this away from us. Just don't. Please don't. Justin Fields and those guys at Ohio State knew they had a special team, knew they had a really, really good football team. Remember, what were we talking about leading up to January 1st, their game against Clemson? How much that team wanted redemption for what happened in the Fiesta Bowl. That was a playoff classic, right? They came up very short. One turnover could have changed the course of that game. And instead, they went into that offseason, okay, when everything's normal, right, when no COVID is hitting, and all of a sudden they're going, all right, we got to find a way to come back from this. Next year, we're going to come back stronger. Next year, we're going to be more focused. Next year, we're not going to let the opportunity slip. Then they start seeing sports in March started going away. Well, that's okay. By the time we get to September, we should be rolling. By the time we get to August, September, we should be good. Oh, no, we're not. Now we're canceling the season. August 11th is when the Big Ten said, no, we're not playing football. I would have screamed at the mountaintop too. No, don't do this to me. Don't do this to me. Yeah, we are coming off a playoff loss. We are focused. You're taking it away. Why?
And no one can make the argument that, Ohio State got blown out by Alabama. Did they really say any team would have gotten blown out by Alabama? This was a once in a lifetime. This was a special, special team.
You know, when we talked about to our guy in Columbus last week, there was a feeling like, okay, they centered everything on Clemson, right? Yeah. If we can get Clemson again, we're gonna win that game. And they did. And Pete Futek made the comparison to the U.S. Soviet hockey team. You got to go beat Finland.
Yeah.
Like you can't, this isn't your Super Bowl. This isn't your gold medal game. You got to go beat Finland. Sometimes you beat Finland and sometimes you're just worn out because you played your quote unquote big game.
Yep.
And that may have been Ohio State. And I know injuries, and they didn't have some key players on the defensive side of the ball, and Alabama's that good. But Ohio State was one of the first teams that really led the charge to get football back. And I'm glad they did. I'm really glad they did. Even if the record books are going to show massive amount of games cancellations and it being problematic for some schools, and some schools may have gotten a little hosed in the deal, like Indiana or someone like. But in the end, You got a worthy champion in Alabama that really showcased how good they are. Brandon Kirchhoff, we'll talk about that next on Wake Up Call.
You're You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us once again. Alabama, the national champs of college football, beating Ohio State last night. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Ben Kercheval, CBS Sports, joins us here on Sports Map Radio. How are you, Ben?
I'm good, man. I just want to say I really appreciate that you got Incubus on the bump.
Yeah, that's nice,
solid,
right?
Choice.
I know.
That's good.
Great, great stuff. Speaking of great stuff, Alabama certainly looked at last night. From your perspective, though, Ohio State, Trey Sermon wasn't playing. A couple of other guys were missing. Was that a factor in this game?
Oh, sure. To beat Alabama, you need to be able to go up and down the field with them. You got to beat them in a boat race. If you look at over the course of the season, the two games that were even the closest for the Crimson Tide this year, Ole Miss and Florida, Ole Miss especially. That was the first and really only time that Alabama looked flummoxed, right? That they were a little bit confused. Maybe there was a little bit of anxiety about whether they would actually win this game. And that's the kind of game plan you need. But when you don't have Sermon, and to be clear, you know, Master Teague came out, had a couple of touchdowns.
Sure.
I think did his part until the game clearly got away from them. But, you know, not having Sermon certainly played a role, I think, for Fields, even though no one questions his grit and his toughness, clearly not 100% on some of his throws. And then really more on the defensive side. You know, they had a couple defensive linemen missing in that game. And so what ends up happening defensively is you're trying to create pressure up the middle, because you know that Mac Jones, for all the great things that he does, not the most athletic guy. I think if you're able to get pressure up the middle, you're able to then, you know, get him to be off on his throws. But in order to do that for them, they had to bring pressure from their linebackers. Well, then that's just creating space on the back end, and you don't have enough probably depth or overall speed to keep up with Alabama's wideout. So I don't think Ohio State played poorly by any stretch. It's just they encountered what was clearly the most elite team in college football this year, and you needed everything to be right for you to have a chance to keep up with them. And, you know, they weren't 100% and they weren't able to keep up. And that's the tale for a lot of teams this year.
Especially in a game like this, where you're talking about the best of the best, were you surprised that here is Alabama? They've got three guys, all Heisman Trophy candidates. One won the Heisman Trophy, and all three of them had great games. Not one was neutralized by the opponent.
Yeah, that's just been them all year. And I think when we try to take a step back and look at 2020 Alabama from 10,000 feet, the thing that really stands out is it was a perfect storm of, you know, future NFL players, which is obviously what Alabama gets, and they develop them and they turn them into Sunday guys. But you have future NFL talent with an NFL, you know, offensive coordinator in Steve Sarkisian, who's getting ready to go off to you know, Texas. And I think college football today, it's about wide receivers. It's about speed on the perimeter. It's about, you know, how you can sort of pace the game with those guys. And they were just all of those things at their absolute apex. And in a year where you didn't always know what you were going to get on a result basis week by week, they came out and they were perfect. And this was Saban's best team ever. And so now I think you can have the argument that it's Alabama's best team ever.
Yeah, I was going to go there because I am one of those people that, you know, like, hey, look, I don't want to, the last thing I saw isn't the best thing I saw. I really wanted to pull back, but I can't think of a team that is like this in all of his other national championships.
No, I mean, only one other time, I think, when they won national championship, were they undefeated. So, and I
right.
understand that just because you win all of your games doesn't necessarily mean that was your best team. I mean, it's possible that another team had a loss and maybe was the better team overall from a personnel standpoint. But certainly from an accomplishment, you can already whittle down some of the other teams just based on what they did over the course of the season. So if you're talking about one of two undefeated teams, this is clearly better than his 2009 team. So
sure.
To me, this makes a lot of sense to say it was Saban's best team. And then when you start going over the course of Alabama's history, where does this team line up? And in the age of scholarship restrictions, in the age of, you know, being able to adapt to the game, I mean, Saban really, about 5 years ago, completely changed his tune on what football was going to be. And once he set that bar, I always like to make the joke that when Nick Saban said, "Is this what we want football to be?" that it was a threat, not a question. Because yeah. once he turned that corner, he was the pace car for everybody else in college football.
That is a great point. When we look back at 2020, and we may be years away from really digesting what COVID did for the sport, is it more impressive, less impressive, Alabama's schedule? I'd like to think 10 games only in the SEC is, but at the same time, teams had to cancel games, teams were decimated, COVID affected teams differently. How do you think this virus will affect the way we see the 2020 season?
That's a good and very complicated question, because like you said, every week it was a new challenge. It wasn't always just a matchup thing. It's, okay, who's not on the field because of COVID-19? There was a week where Nick Saban wasn't on the field in the Iron Bowl due to COVID-19. So every single week you are absolutely pushed in terms of your focus and what you're able to do. And that's extremely difficult. And that's the part that really sort of supersedes any, you know, strength of schedule. How good was the SEC this year? Well, for most of the season, the rest of the SEC, other than a couple of teams, didn't look all that amazing. But, you know, lo and behold, you get the bowl season and they go 7-2. So who really knows? I mean, this was really the year where I think you could not toss out, you know, efforts or records or anything like that, but just understand the context of, on a week-by-week basis, you never really knew what you were going to get out of about 99% of the teams out there. So I would just say the fact that you were able to win all of your games in a time where every single week you didn't know what the status was going to be for any one player, any one game, it's just one of those things you absolutely have to applaud. Extremely difficult in a normal season. Doubly, triply so in a year like this.
Ben Kercheval joins us, CBS Sports, talking college football, the national championship game last night. So when we look back on college football in general in 2020, and this goes even larger than just Alabama and the national championship game, glad it got in, glad we got to the finish line. How would you grade the way the whole sport treated COVID and the way it went about COVID?
That's also a good but a complicated question to answer, because, like you said,
I try to hit you up, Ben, with some good ones.
these are good. And I think, well, it's not only a good question, I think it's an important question, because at a certain point, you know, how do you define what was good or not? The fact that we got through the season, okay, sure, that's fine. There are a lot of, you know, disruptions along the way, and certainly that, you know, could have been a factor in ending things early. At the same time, we got this whole thing over the summer. Well, but players are safer on campus than they would be. College campuses became a hotspot for COVID.
Right.
I mean, what are we talking about here? And really early on, schools, and I know they were still reporting into the county if you had a case, but after a while, they stopped, like, giving you numbers. There was no, like, unified front on how you were supposed to handle this. I mean, that part's an F. The fact that you got through the season is an A. So I don't know, a C, incomplete. I mean, a lot of me thinks that, you know, we kind of just take this season and we try to learn lessons from it more than just sort of celebrate and pat ourselves on the back that we got through it. Because you're sitting there looking at college football right now. NCAA keeps pushing the name, image, likeness stuff down the road. They're kicking the can down the road on that. And there's never been a stronger argument that college football players are essential workers who should be paid. And yet we absolutely didn't even make any progress on that. There's so many ways that we can look at this season and either give them a passing or failing grade.
Yeah, because you looked at the other sports, the professional sports, they all had to sit down with a union and go, listen, here's how we're going to do this. Do you agree with how we do it? College football just said, we're playing, and if you want in, this is how it's going to be.
Yeah, yep. And the ones who did say, look, we just don't think we can do it, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, didn't even stick to the word.
Right.
Didn't even stick to the word. And I have a lot of mixed feelings about whether this season could have, should have been played. Obviously, it was able to be played. That's good. We got to the finish line. That's also good. But a lot of warts along the way. I'll say that.
Ben, always good talking to you, my friend. Hope to catch up with you soon. Always good chatting, my man.
All right, thanks, Aaron. Take care.
You got it. Ben Kirchhoff, CBS Sports, college football. Good points along the line. It's really, he makes a couple of good points there. Yeah, we got to the finish line in college football. Were there bumps along the way? Of course there were going to be. I don't think anybody thought that there wasn't going to be, right? I mean, we were going to have some teams that were going to do some schools, I should say, that were not going to be, you know, compliant with certain things, and it led to cancellations of games and whatnot. That's all said and good, right? We knew that those were going to happen. Overall, is it good that college football got played? Sure. Could it have been a little tighter? Yeah. I mean, the Big Ten and the Pac, like, I look at the Pac-12, all right? And I wonder, was it worth it? Like, was it worth it for them to come back and play? Now, the Big Ten got a national champion participant in it, in Ohio State. And we had a fun little story about Indiana and possibly getting screwed at a shot to play for their conference title. But does anybody even realize what the Pac-12 did this year, which was pretty much nothing? I mean, they played six games. Hardly anybody got those games in. They were playing in states where you shouldn't even be gathering to play these games. Games were getting canceled constantly. I mean, just all over the place. I mean, Washington played four games this year. That was it. That's all they could get in. Well, Stanford got in all six. Some played five. Cal played four. Washington played four. USC, a ranked team, played five. It was, what was the point of that other than they didn't want to be the conference that was left out of the party, right? That was it. They didn't want to be the lone conference on the island. The Big Ten was hoping teams, conferences would follow them. They hoped that teams, yeah, I know people say, no, that's not true. That is absolutely true. There is no way the Big Ten was going to go about that alone. They were not. They were, and nobody would want to. I don't care who it is. I don't care what conference you are of the Power Five. You were not going to be the lone conference that wasn't going to play. But when it came time to come and roaring back, the Big Ten was, okay, this is how we're going to do it. This is how many games we're going to play. The Pac-12 was like, yeah, by the way, California isn't letting us gather, so we're going to have to move some games until they do. Right, they were in a totally different scenario and barely got any football games in at all. I think when you look back at 2020, I think the greatness of Alabama, the greatness of Ohio State for that matter, and Clemson and Notre Dame, and how good Florida was at times, and all these other schools that had sort of their moment in the sun, and the coaching changes that occurred, you also have to put in the history of how we even got on the field in the first place. The willingness of Greg Sankey in the SEC to say no non-conference games, none, all SEC games. There will be no break. There will be no cupcakes, nothing. You will play an SEC schedule all the way through. Two, the Big Ten saying, yeah, it looks like everybody's playing football. I guess we should be playing football too. And let's get Ohio State in a position to win a national title. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's, as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This hour of Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage is giving away two $500,000 prizes during Super Bowl 55 that could be used to buy your dream home. See results and enter for free today at RocketMortgageSquares.com. That's RocketMortgageSquares.com. What a great prize. So tell me about this tweet Eric Edelson put out about college football.
He put out a tweet, and then he doubled down. So I'll throw the double down on it after we talk about the original. But since 2005, every college football champion has been located within 600 miles of Atlanta.
So when you first told me that, I went, yeah, that sounds about right. Then I thought about Ohio State, and I was wondering if that's within a 600-mile radius.
About 560 miles.
All right, very good. All right, so he doubled down. Did anybody challenge him on that?
No.
No, okay, good, because it's... That's true.
No, it's true.
We haven't had USC in the...
Not since 2004.
We haven't had USC in... Or Texas was the last one Texas that was outside of that one. Bubble.
Yeah,
right?
That was in 2005.
So we've got Alabama a bunch of times, Auburn a few times, we've got LSU, we got...
Florida.
Florida.
Florida State.
Florida State. We got Ohio State, Clemson. Is that it?
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, that means very it's good. The same schools over and over again. But then he doubled down on it.
Good.
And in the 15 years before that, fewer than half of the champions were in that geographical area.
Oh, wow. That's pretty amazing.
So either Eric has a lot of time on his hands this morning or, you know, I don't know. And then I'm looking at that list and I'm like, okay, fewer than half. So you have in the 15 years prior, so what, 2005 to like 1990?
Right.
Right? Those same schools pop up again. You have an LSU, Miami, Florida. That Miami's more than 600 miles away, right?
Oh, yeah.
You got a Florida State. Tennessee's within reach.
Yeah, Tennessee's within reach.
But then, yeah, you have a bunch of others. You have Michigan, Nebraska, a bunch of times.
So this is as the crow flies, as they say?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, very good.
I think Georgia Tech is within 600 miles of Atlanta, right?
Yeah, I think, yeah. I think it's in 2 miles of Atlanta, Georgia Tech. That's awesome. That's great. That's good. I don't know how people come up with that. What makes people go, you know, this seems to have a relevance to Atlanta. Let me just check my Google Maps here.
Yeah, I don't even think that way.
I don't either. Wake up call.